Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we are going to be focusing on Shir HaShirim Perek Hey, the fifth chapter of the book of Shir HaShirim. This Perek is one of the saddest prokim in Shir HaShirim. We'll soon see why. It is made up of 16 psukim and is basically divided into two sections. The first pasuk, although a very famous pasuk, actually technically belongs to the previous Perek as we discussed yesterday. And that is, the first pasuk is Basi Legani Achosi Chala. It's describing how the chasan, the groom, the dod, has entered the garden. He has now entered the union of his ra'aya, and he describes the beauty of their relationship. He describes he describes Mori im besori, orisi mori im besami, ochalti yari im divshi, shasisi yeni im chalavi. So it's a description in terms of the direct translation of, I plucked my myrrh and my spice, eaten my honey, my honeycomb, drunk my wine and my milk. This relates in the levels of drash to be understood the actions of Klal Yisrael, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates, the korbanos which they bring to Hashem, which Hashem eats. All the different actions, the Kohanim serving, the Levim serving, and the Beis HaMikdash, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates. So all actions that are done, so to speak, in the consummating of the marriage of the nation of Israel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is describing, Basi Legani, I've come to the garden, which is in this union with the nation of Israel. That belongs more to yesterday's Perek. Today, our main focus is going to be the Perek Hay, the main part of Perek Hay, and that's Psukim Beis Teches is the first section. On the basic level, the pshat level, this seems to be a dream that the raya, the woman, is having. So, ani yishena velibi er, I am sleeping, but my heart is awake. And in her sleep, whether this is in the dream or whether this is actually happening and she's noticing in a subconscious state, she describes, kol dodi dofek, pischili rayasi achosi rayasi, yonasi samasi. And here's the knock of the dod who wants to come to her. He hears, and these are all the terms of endearment that he's used up till now, my sister, my beloved, my dove, my pure one. So all these descriptions over here are ones we've heard him giving to her beforehand. And he wants to come in. But she makes excuses. She says, Poshatati kutonti, es kutonti echocha el boshena. I take it off my shirt, I'm ready in pajamas. Rachatzti es raglai, I've cleaned my feet. I'm going to get out of bed now. It's the middle of the night. I'm busy. I'm involved. I want to just have a little bit of a snooze. Finally, she does decide to do this. She goes out. But he leaves. And she gets up and she looks. And she's looking and she's trying to find him. And she's trying to find him, but he's gone. Now she yotza b'dabroi b'kashtiv lo metzasihu. And I call out to him, and he's no longer willing to answer. And instead, what happens is she's now found by the Shomrim. The Shomrim she's met already beforehand in the previous parakim, but this time they beat her. Hikuni upitsauni. They injure me. Nosues redidime alai. Shomrei achomos. And the guarders of the walls take away her clothes. They strip her of her clothes. They beat her. And then she says, she turns to the Benos Yerushalayim, to the daughters of Yerushalayim, she says, Hishpati Yaschem Benos Yerushalayim. She makes a second oath. If you see my beloved, my dod, tell him that I'm lovesick for him. It could be, the Dat Mikra of Amos Chacham suggests, that she woke up after this terrible dream, and that's when she tells the Benos Yerushalayim what she's going through. It's worthwhile, by the way, at this point, contrasting this dream to the Perek Beis, where she talks about how she makes the Benos Yerushalayim take a oath for being lovesick for her dod, there about the unbreakable connection between her and her beloved, the nation of Israel and Hashem. And also Perek Gimel, where she has another dream about her beloved, and she looks for him, but in that case she finds him. In this case, she does not find him. This leads us to the second half of the Perek, Psukim Tes to Tes Zion, in which this section, it's the response of the Benos Yerushalayim. So the Benos Yerushalayim are being told that they're being given the message to give to the dod that she loves him so. But they ask, well, what's so special about him? Why are you making us swear? You can't find another guy? There's no one as special as him? That's the question that the Benos Yerushalayim ask her. And she responds and she describes her beloved. She describes him very, very beautiful terms, if you very poetic terms, really, from Pasuk Tess onwards. So, you know, Doditzach v'odam, Dogulmer v'vah, he is clean-skinned and ruddy, preeminent among the 10,000, Rosh HaKesem Paz, his head is finest gold, Ketzu Sosov, Tal Talim, Shecharos Ka'arev, his locks are curled and as black as a raven, Enov Kiyonim, his eyes like doves. So it's a very beautiful description. A lot of it borrows imagery from the bird kingdom, from the plant kingdom, and from the architecture of temples. And what's fascinating about it, points out Rav Moshe Chacham, is that a majority of the descriptions that she is giving are not descriptions for a mugshot. So it's, no, we're not talking about telling a stranger how to find somebody that they haven't met yet. That does not sound like what she's doing. A lot of the descriptions are very much intimate and descriptions of her relationship to him more than they are about describing his physical features to them. And that's precisely what's happening over here. Is they were asking what's so special about him, and she's describing in terms of endearment how special he is to her, why it is that she will not let him go even though he is gone. Historically speaking, the way to understand this perek is that there seems to be moments in history that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, is close to the nation of Israel. He knocks on the door, he is proximate, but we're not ready, we're busy, we're settled down. We're involved in society. We're paying off our mortgages. We're doing other things. And we ignore that. And then in that moment, he leaves. That gets us to who are the Shomrim? Who are these guards who beat her? It sounds like that the nation of Israel, when they reject those opportunities, those messianic potential moments where it could have been better, we're left up to the vicissitudes of history. We're left to the nations all by ourselves because we could have got out of this situation, but we chose not to. And therefore, we go through the beatings of history without anyone there to save us. What is very beautiful is that we never revoke our love. When we do teshuva, when we look for our dod, when we look for our Kodesh Baruch Hu, we never really let him go, even though we missed the first opportunity when he gave us the time to do teshuva. And that comes to the question is, who are the Benos Yerushalayim? Who are the daughters of Yerushalayim? It seems to be these are other nations of the world who are curious and are saying, why are you hanging on to this past? Why are you saying this Dod Hashem is so special to you? Do you not know that he rejected you? Don't you know that you were replaced as in the world scheme of religions? Don't you know that your downtrodden state is an indication of the fact that you've been theologically rejected? But even in his absence, we still describe in the most uniqueness of relationships, which cannot be questioned, because this is our emunah, the nation of Israel's trust, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ultimately redeem us, even though we missed many opportunities. On a level of drash, all the descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the perspective of Israel are taken to be allegorical. So as an example, just two words here, the Gemara Chagiga Dav Tes Vavam Beis to Tes Zayin Amud Alev tells us that Rabbi Akiva entered an area called Paradise. Let's say he, with three other sages, entered into this sublime metaphysical realm, and everybody else emerged damaged. So I'm Elisha ben Avuya, ben Azai, ben Zoma. They all came out in some way damaged. Rabbi Akiva emerged pure. How was it? So Rabbi Abao quotes our pasuk and says because he understood the concept in pasuk Yud of Dagul Merivavah, preeminent among the myriad, Dugmahu Merivavah Shalai, that he is exemplary among his myriad, and that's how Rabbi Akiva emerged unscathed. What does that mean? The Chiddushei Agados of the Maharal explains that what that means to say is that when he ascended into this metaphysical kingdom, he noticed that there were many, many powers that looked very godly. And one of the mistakes that Rav Elisha ben Avuya made, which perhaps led him to becoming Acher, was to think that there were multiple Rishuyos, multiple sets of powers that dominate this world. Whereas Rabbi Akiva understood that Dagul Merivavah HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the source of all of those different powers and angels that he saw, even Metatron, as he quotes, some of the more celestial beings that were seemed to be evil powers in the world. Nonetheless, they were ultimately under the rubric, under the pyramid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how he emerged. This is, again, an example of just two words in our perek, Dagul Mervava, being the idea of our description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our perception, the Raya's perception of the Dod. When did this perek actually happen? When is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knocked and we missed that moment? So it's happened many, many times in history, times in during Tanakh, but most recently, Rav Soloveitchik wrote an essay, which was actually a speech he gave at the Lamport Auditorium in 1956, 8 short years after the establishment of the State of Israel. And he gave a speech in Yiddish, which was later written into a book and then later translated into Hebrew and English, which is called Kol Dodi Dofek. There's the sound of my beloved, which knocks at the door. And this is a very worthwhile, very, very worthwhile read. It gives perspective. Remember, at this point in time, the State of Israel has not had any peace. There's been attrition in the south, been attrition in the north, all the way through. This is going to lead ultimately to the Six-Day War in a decade. It's in a very precarious place. The state is very, very troubled financially and on a level of security. And he describes in the section called The Six Knocks the following. These are his words. 8 years ago, in the midst of a night of terrors of Maidanek, Treblinka, and Buchenwald, in a night of gas chambers and crematoria, in a night of total divine self-concealment, in a night ruled by the devil of doubt and destruction, who sought to sweep the lover from her own tent into the Catholic Church, in an hour of continuous searching for her beloved, on that very night the beloved appeared. The Almighty, who was hiding in his splendid sanctum, suddenly appeared and began to beckon at the tent of the lover, who tossed and turned on her bed, beset by convulsions and the agonies of hell, because the beating and knocking of the door at the door of the mournful lover, the State of Israel, was born. And Rav Soloveitchik goes on to describe that in fact there were 6 knocks upon the door. The knock upon the political door, understanding why it could be that throughout the Cold War there was no converged decision between the East and West except for the vote on the State of Israel. Knock on the door of the battlefield, of how it was that there was this miraculous victory on the battlefield, the few against the many. The knock on the door to the tent of theology. Christianity had to rethink their assumptions about the nation of Israel being a downtrodden brother. The knock on the tent of the heart of the assimilated youth, who now, whether they liked it or not, are associated with the State of Israel, even if they are trying to run away from Judaism. The knock of that Jewish blood is no longer cheap and for the killing, that people who will in fact inflict harm will be harmed. And finally, the knock that there is a homeland for Jews around the world to escape. Rav Soloveitchik said this in 1956, and it has become ever increasingly true on all of these 6 perspectives, where Rav Soloveitchik speaks not from a messianic Zionistic perspective, from a practical Zionistic perspective, and says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is knocking. And he concludes and he says in the essay that ultimately we as diaspora, and specifically Orthodox American Jews, is who he's addressing, did not necessarily respond in like financially, in terms of going, in terms of investing, in terms of caring. People were hedge sitting. They wanted to see how it would work out, and if we should send our funds, if we should go there. Right, when it all worked out after the Six-Day War, that was fine. He's talking before the Six-Day War. And therefore, Rav Soloveitchik says, are we going to stay in bed and say, Poshatati es kutanti, I got into pajamas, why do I need to get up now? We need to hear the call of the knock of the beloved. Rav Soloveitchik point out that this is one of those moments where this perek is true. I'd like to add one extra point in that. One of my rabbis, Rabbi J.J. Schechter, who was a Talmud, spent an incredible amount of time with Rav Soloveitchik, pointed out that the reason Rav Soloveitchik based this essay, this very, very powerful work, on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, or the story, is first of all because it's very germane to the story, but it's also because in a certain sense, in a veiled attempt, this was a response to the Satmar Rebbe, who took his work of the Gimel Shvois, of the 3 oaths, of Yishpati Eschem Benos Yerushalayim, which was just 2 prakim prior, to show that we should not be, perhaps, in embracing and involved with the State of Israel. And Rav Soloveitchik was gently pushing back and saying, you know what, Shir HaShirim also tells us about what happens if we ignore the knock of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Very powerful perek, a perek which is worth our thinking about on an individualistic level and on a national level, to be able to hear the knocks of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives and not miss them. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.